On Tuesday, 14th of February, 2012, I carried out a post-mortem examination on the body of Catherine Rowan of 121 Craneview Road, Surbiton, at the instance of Dr. Brian Steddings, coroner. The body was that of a 51-year-old female, 5 foot 7 inches in height and of moderate obese build. There was a small scar on the right side of the neck. Both earlobes had been pierced, the left torn. I remember how my mother got that scar. She was attacked in the school playground. It happened as we waited for the bell to signal the beginning of the school day. I was about 6 years old in Ms. Graham's class, 2B. My baby brother, Christopher, was snotty and cold in his pushchair, the front wheels positioned on the 2 and 3 of the hopscotch grid. I remember this because my mother was standing on the 7, making it an impossibly long leap from where I was at number 1. Her hair was pulled back, quickly and quietly, by Sue Warren. Sue lived a few doors down from us with her daughter Jenny and son Sam. I'd sat in her car and at her table before, but whatever instinct led her to grab my mother's hair, an entangled earring, back in this strangely intimate way, and stare down into my mother's pained face, made her strange and ugly to me. Remembering that morning as an adult, I find myself wondering at my failure to cry. Christopher also failed in this basic requirement of the young and immobile whose lot it is to watch their mother plucked from them. But Christopher didn't cry because his pushchair was positioned away from the shuffling feet from what looked like a rather undignified fight for square number 10. I didn't cry because it simply wasn't an anatomical possibility. I was too astonished by what the woman who looked like Sue was doing to my mother. And I wasn't the only one frozen by events. The mothers of my friends and classmates also looked on, stupefied. The incongruous hush of a playground before the bell was broken only by my mother's croaky grunts, uncertain but persevering. Sue spoke first. "I need to talk to you about Jenny." She said it almost calmly, as though my mother needn't rush, as if she'd tapped my mother gently on the arm instead of grabbing her hair up in an angry fist. My mother tried to nod, made her strained face look even more stretched as she tried to bring her chin down in assent. The other women approached cautiously when Sue had let go of my mother's hair, their resolve to intervene stiffened by the absence of any requirement to do so. "How could you let it happen?" Sue's voice was hoarse and dry. I could tell she needed to swallow. "Allow Richard to put his filthy hands on my Jenny. She's a child, just a child." I saw the looks of concern turn to confusion. They were wondering if my mother had it coming. Finally, one of them broke ranks and stepped forward. "You all right, Kath?" Careful not to look at Sue with anything that might be construed as reproach. At that moment, Miss Graham came out of her classroom and rang the bell vigorously, joyful in her oblivion. Sue stepped away from my mother, her palms out and open in the universal gesture of, "It wasn't me," or, even if it was, the preamble to a pretty robust explanation. My mother put her hand up to her left ear, stroked the earlobe gently, and then smelt her fingers. As she looked at me in horror, I began to cry. She was smelling the blood that was running down her neck. My mother's torn earlobe was just one scar on her corpse among many. The others were more difficult to discern, buried so deep they would only show themselves to the pathologist's scalpel. It was, of course, the most obvious physical assault on her body in the wake of my father's affair. But seeing it recorded so clinically reminds me how public her humiliation was. Not just that day in the playground, or even the years afterwards, but now, in her death. Her earlobe, like so much other tissue, weighed and fingered, dispassionately reported in those pages, bears witness to all her body suffered.